It's Marketplace Tech Report from APM, American Public Media, for Tuesday, February 15th, 2011. I'm John Moe. There's one picture from Egypt that really struck me. Spray painted on the side of a fence, the word Facebook. As protests spread to Iran, Bahrain, Yemen, Algeria, and Jordan, governments are figuring out how to handle social media, which can function as a sort of digital underground newspaper. And today, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton heads to George Washington University to discuss internet freedom. Evgeny Morozov is author of The Net Delusion, The Dark Side of Internet Freedom. He says the more people can get online, the more the governments can watch.
If all they want is to figure out where the next protest is going to be, they, of course, can turn to Facebook, or they can turn to Twitter, to many of the websites which are being used to coordinate public action. If, however, they want to look at secret communication between activists, look at their email, look at their some of the internal messages sent on Facebook and on other sites, it will be somewhat more difficult. But even there, we know that a lot of governments in the Middle East are buying technology which allows them to do that. In the case of Egypt, their government had technology for so-called deep packet inspection, which allows to analyze traffic exchanged between, you know, websites and users. So I would say it's pretty easy if they really want to to keep their eyes on it.
How about on the user side of it? I mean, if you're on Twitter, you can use a fake name. Facebook wants real names, but it offers the HTTPS setting. How effective are some of those just standard basic ways for people who maybe don't want to be spied on by their governments?
The problem with using fake names on Twitter and other sites, and as you've said, Facebook doesn't allow that, which makes a lot of activists angry. But the problem with this is that it makes very hard for activists to establish their credentials, because it may as well be a secret police who is pretending to be activists using fake names, right? So this in some sense abstracts from the promise of social media, because it makes it harder to mobilize supporters, because all of them have to think hard whether the person they're talking to may actually be a spy or someone working for the government.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton gives a speech today about internet freedom. What role does the U.S. play here? What's the U.S.'s responsibility in these situations?
Well, the American government has found itself in a very interesting position where, on the one hand, some parts of the U.S. government, especially the State Department, feel very enthusiastic about promoting a concept like internet freedom. On the other hand, you have other parts of the U.S. government, National Security Agency and many others, which are actually quite unhappy about the internet. They would want to have more power to monitor conversations that are happening online. They would want to limit the ability of internet pirates or child pornographers or many other social groups to basically use the internet towards their own ends. So I think that we need to see more consistency on behalf of people in Washington and on behalf of the U.S. government, and they need to find a way to reconcile their own rhetoric domestically, where they frequently talk about internet kill switch and other ideas which, you know, may only make it easier for governments abroad, and particularly for authoritarian governments, to exert greater control over the internet.
That's Evgeny Morozov. Another story we're following at MarketplaceTech.org, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement seized 18 websites accused of selling counterfeit goods for Valentine's Day, including fake designer items from Prada and Gucci. A huge blow to people looking to impress that special someone with fake Prada. It's part of the government's ongoing anti-piracy effort. We have more stories about that at our website. Producer Larissa Anderson is here with a tech story you may have missed.
John, everyone knows F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby is a literary masterpiece. But one question has always remained.
Why hasn't anyone turned it into a video game?
Obviously. Well, good news. Some San Francisco web designers have built an intentionally primitive mid-80s game of Gatsby,
complete with that 8-bit soundtrack that we're hearing now.
In the game, you're Nick Carraway, and your mission is to find Gatsby, dodging flappers and butlers, collecting gold, powering up with cocktails.
Well, I love the idea of powering up with cocktails. Finally, a great Gatsby in video game form, you know, so the kids can relate.
Provided they live in 1985.
And are fond of F. Scott Fitzgerald. We have a link to the game at MarketplaceTech.org. This is Marketplace Tech Report. I'm John Moe.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.